Hello once again, Torch Faithful. This is Kelly Wells, and I am your host of PWT Talks NXT. We have a two-man booth again this week. Harley is off doing the Mae Young Classic, and we also don't have Tom Stout because he was at the tapings for the next set of the NXT shows. So he passed along just a couple of non-spoilerish notes there. We did have Xavier Woods at the show. He came out to actually hype an NXT versus WWE up up down down challenge that is 4 against 4. That is the only thing Tom told us about the tapings. Otherwise, he did pass along a few notes, some of them actually fairly interesting, about the taping we just saw. So we might talk about that a little bit, but let me go ahead and introduce Justin James, my other in the two-man booth tonight.
Hi, I'm Justin James. You can find me on Twitter at Justin_M_James.
All right, and I'm Kelly Wells. I do the NXT tracker on the site. I have not done very many in the last few weeks just because I have been very busy getting my game, as the regular listeners will know, that I created a tabletop game that I had on Kickstarter, and it was successfully funded. So tomorrow is the very end of the campaign. If you want to pre-order a copy, you can still go to Kickstarter and look up Fun Dead, the Gravest Show on Earth. But we are fully funded, and at this point, it's just whether you want to back the game or be drawn into the game. So anyway,
you know what's awful? You know what just popped in my head as you were saying that?
What's that?
Lemmy's voice.
Lemmy's voice. Oh, time to play
all
the game?
All about the game.
Yeah,
right. I am playing. Yeah.
Yes, I'd like to think Lemmy would be all about a game with circus performers versus zombies. And I'd like to think you would too, folks.
Only if it involved Jack Daniels and amphetamines would he be into it.
he did party hard, did the Lemster. So we are
going to see him a couple months before he died.
We're going to start with a couple of emails. Andrew Gamble is going to weigh in on something from last week. He said, as a follow-up to last night's discussion on moves from the top turnbuckle, the video games have moves from the top turnbuckle listed as Avalanche. Not sure if that's where Morrow is getting it from, or it's a new company-wide Vince-ism that people are supposed to start using. Sincerely, Andrew Gamble. We did talk about this last week, Justin and I did, why seemingly they have started to... Usually it's pretty obvious when there's a mandate, because all of a sudden nobody will say title shot, and everybody will say championship opportunity without fail. Even if it's a character who would not use that nomenclature, they just say it every single time. That's what they do. But yes, it seems like top rope moves or Avalanche moves... at this point, and instead of flying or super or whatever you want to call them, and Andrew was weighing in on this. So looking more and more like that's a mandate. We are also going to get this one out of the way right away from Joe Hill. Hello, chaps. Quickish one for you today. I feel hugely conflicted as a network subscriber and WWE fan today. On the one hand, we have the egregious Crown Jewel event. On the other, NXT UK starts today. We've always had to reconcile certain aspects of this fandom, but the implicit endorsement of a government like Saudi Arabia is to me way beyond even the worst excesses of the Attitude Era. Yet, I cannot wait to see the new UK product. How do we reconcile these things? Love the show, etc. Yours confusedly, Joe. I wondered if we were going to end up talking about this or if this was going to sidestep us because we talk NXT. I think I'm relieved that I get to weigh in a little bit. I actually ran into Wade Keller on Thursday. For those of you listening, this is not like online ran into him. Wade and I actually happened to live in the same town, and it's reasonable that we'd run into each other. So we did run into each other, talked for quite a while about the Saudi Arabia situation, and it's a difficult one. It's asking a lot of somebody who's a wrestling fan just because wrestling is stupid and fun and we love it. It's not something you expect to have to cover when you are a wrestling fan. So for me, I spend a lot of time thinking about how they spin this to the wrestlers, because certainly not all of them can be on board with being out there. given all of what's going on over there and with Jamal Khashoggi and everything like that. So they cannot all be on board with this. So I know that it's probably spun to them that it's kind of an altruistic thing they're doing. They're trying to promote change, and maybe that's true, but it feels like there's bridges that shouldn't be crossed, and this missing journalist seems like a bridge that maybe shouldn't be crossed. I would love for this show to be somewhere else, and that audience was largely papered anyway for the Greatest Royal Rumble, and it played to a rather quiet crowd despite being kind of a supercard. I don't know. This is a tough one for me too. I never planned on watching that show, but as long as I'm watching the product on the whole, it's a lot to think about. And, I don't think I'll belabor my stance any more than that. Justin, how much of this have you followed and how are you feeling?
I've been following about it. I'm a political junkie. Politics is the other sport I follow, assuming you consider either politics or professional wrestling to be a quote-unquote sport.
Right. They're about as legitimate as the other, so, you know.
Yeah, just in different ways. One's not scripted. Guess which one.
Yeah, right.
Here's the thing. Let me ask you something, Kelly. How many Michael Jackson albums you own?
I would say three.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, everybody's got Bad and Thriller, and then maybe you got like History, or I've got three. I've got Up Against the Wall.
Off the Wall, thank you. Yeah, I've got Bad, Thriller, and Off the Wall.
Yeah. Wow, we have the exact same Michael Jackson albums of his entire discography, right?
All right.
Michael Jackson's was a creepy person accused kind of credibly of pedophilia. Right? Do you got any Pantera albums? Phil Anselmo, no. Racist.
I got that after I found that out.
I actually never bought one because of that. I was almost finally ready to pull the trigger on some on like Far Beyond Driven or something. Yeah, I had a vulgar
display of power, and I decided to get rid of it after that.
Yeah, right. Or Dave Mustaine. There's another. I mean, I know people who love Megadeth and won't buy a Megadeth album. Beyond them, right? How many people still watch Roman Polanski films, right? Everybody's got a point, right? Where you say, look, this is entertainment that I consume. How many people shop, you know, eat at Chick-fil-A, even though the owner has an anti-homosexual agenda, right? So we all do things where we're supporting a company where the things that the company does to support a particular political stance or support an entity that we disagree with politically, it's there. I don't think many of us are going to shop at a restaurant where, you know, there's a local restaurant by me, Maurice's Barbecue, where the owner is extremely vocal about being pro-segregation. Extremely vocal, right? And as a result, most people around me shun Maurice's Barbecue. I think, you know, there's a line that every company crosses where they go from being a collaborationist to an ugly regime, right? Which is, I think that would be one way we could phrase what WWE is being here. They're being a collaborationist to the Saudi regime. And even before this, the Saudi regime, let's not mince words, was dirty. They are dirty, 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 dirty. Always have been. Impressive. I mean, they just legalized women driving a couple months ago. And a dead journalist is the line that we're crossing? Is the line in the sand? Come on. I almost want to be like, this is now when we raise our hands?
It's a highly visible thing that happened because it happened at a consulate.
I know, but
wasn't even it, in.
Yeah, I know, right. But the point I'm getting at is that we all make our own individual decisions. Like you personally sold your Pantera albums. Me personally, I never bought some. Actually, I mean, I did have a copy of like Far Beyond Driven when I was a kid. But I sold it like a million years ago. I personally won't buy a Pantera album.
Yeah,
I own Michael, but I'll buy a Michael Jackson, and maybe somebody else is willing to buy Pantera albums and not listen to Michael Jackson because, you know, so I think that for each person, right, you have to make an individual decision. And I'll say this, I don't think that anyone should feel guilty or bad about the decision that they make here. I had a discussion with one of the very woke people I know, right, a couple months ago on Facebook about this exact topic. And this is the exact conversation I had. And she said, look, like, nobody's more like feminist than I am. I'll promise you, nobody's more feminist than she is, right? Nobody, I know very few people who are more to the left than she is without me saying, you're such a political extremist, I'm surprised you haven't been arrested, right? She's right, very left. And she said, look, you know, there's some entertainment where I'm willing to support with my dollars a problematic entertainer. Because, you know what? I'm just really entertained by them. And I acknowledge it, and I move on. I said, yeah, that's exactly my stance, too. Like, sometimes you just acknowledge, like, this person's problematic. I'm separating the art from the entertainment. I know there's a little touch of hypocrisy here because I won't do that for other artists. But forget it. I like this artist a lot. I like their entertainment a lot. And I'm going to make an exception on totally arbitrary grounds. And maybe I'll justify in the back of my head so I can enjoy my life. And you know what? That's cool. Like I'm not going to bust anybody's chops over. If somebody wants to say, like, I'm going to – for me, the challenge for me with WWE, the thing that gets me to almost cancel the network on a regular basis is the concussion issue. Every time I tell my oldest son that he's not allowed to play football, he's not allowed to join the wrestling team, he's not allowed to go to hockey tryouts – because of the concussion risk, I feel like a rank hypocrite knowing that, you know, because I watch professional wrestling and we know about concussions in pro wrestling. So, yeah, I'm a hypocrite. I'm happy my son doesn't call me out on it. One day, maybe if he clues in, he'll call me out on it. I'll have to say, like, I know, but the difference is you're my son and Daniel Bryan is not my son.
Right. Concussions are tough, and I'm glad that I have just – two kids, they're both female, and neither one is really interested in athletics. So I'm not.
I was about to say cheerleading. Cheerleading is like the number one concussion sport in high schools, dude.
Is it? Are you, sir? Is it really?
You're standing on a piece of asphalt, tossing somebody 20 feet in the air.
Right.
What do you think happens when Jocko drops her?
I'm from a tiny town, so we didn't have a lot of super talented people to pull from. So we didn't have them doing like those big moves. Like
my
cheerleaders mostly stood around.
I'm from a tiny town and our cheerleading squad was so good that they actually got sent to France to do a thing for like the D-Day anniversary in the 50th anniversary of D-Day.
My high school had one pretty good looking cheerleader, and you know what? She was my girlfriend. So there you go. But anyway,
picture it didn't happen.
And always, hey, yeah, you know, the pics of her today are not as they were then. But yeah, there's, I could give you my yearbook, and it's the stuff she wrote in there was actually very graphic. But like, really? I can't show my kids my yearbook because of what my ex girlfriend wrote in it.
I just had a 4-year-old. That's very graphic.
Yeah, she's cool. We still get along. Anyway, not still. We stopped getting along and we started again. Anyway, Joe Hill, we went way off the rails there at the end. But thank you for giving us an excuse to maybe weigh in on this. It's kind of odd to start our NXT podcast with this for a while, but it's part of the family, and I feel like this one has really tested me as well, like nothing else. I am a massive pro wrestling fan for my whole life. I do have a lot of wrestling interests, chief among them New Japan, that are not related to WWE, so I don't have to make those calls there, but it's been really difficult leading up to this one, and And by next week, we'll probably know whether this is or is not. Hopefully, we'll know whether this is or is not going to be in Saudi Arabia. But I would say, although they didn't mention that it's going to be in Saudi Arabia these last 2 days, they never once spoke where it's going to be. They also haven't pulled out of it as fast as I would think they would if they were going to have enough time to sell tickets elsewhere. So my prediction, when I talked to Wade, I know what I said was, I think they'll run it. I think that's what I said to Wade. Maybe it's what I said to my friend Nate. It doesn't matter. It was that night. I said, I think they'll probably run it, and they'll stop talking about the fact that it's there. And when it's over, then maybe they will kind of attempt to quietly say, yeah, the contract for 10 years, it's all on hiatus. It's all on the back burner. We've got to figure out what's going on over there before we can be part of this. That's what I predicted. Because politically, that seems like all the moves that they would make, because they want the money, they want the payouts, but they've got to understand that this is a big deal. They've never asked their fans, WWE, to set aside so much of their decency, other than the entire Attitude Era.
Diva
that's
Zero.
That's a totally
the whole Divas thing. I mean, Michael yeah. Vick. I guess that's Michael Vick. Right. Yeah, I mean, Heidenreich. I mean, yeah, I mean, other than that, yeah.
So
WWE's been nothing but a shining example. In fact, Vince Warrior proudly wears a shirt that says hashtag SJW.
Oh, yeah, right. It's been a beacon of positivity. Otherwise, it has.
The power of positivity.
Right.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about some wrestling. NXT aired tonight. Who knew? We watched it. It had a double main event, neither of which ended in a clean finish. Probably should have kind of seen that coming, but what are you going to do? First match, first main event was War Raiders versus Undisputed Era. I dare say that this was – okay, I'm going to read Chris Fielder's email about it because I – he said almost exactly what I was thinking. Hey, guys, I have a couple things to talk about tonight. First off, holy hell, did the War Raiders look good or what? In my opinion, this is the match they've needed to have since they first arrived in NXT. This match not only showed off some of their outstanding moveset, but also showed that they could hang with the upper echelon of the tag team division. I personally enjoyed the heck out of this match, and I bet poor Roderick Strong was sore for at least a week. What did you guys think? Secondly, I'm going to ask again, since Bobby Fish is now officially back, do you guys think we're going to have four-man teams at War Games? I really hope so. And then he said, sorry, I had to email again. The Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair match was the glitteriest match that I've ever seen in my life. LOL. Thanks. That is Chris Fielder, baby. So, I do believe, yes, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, I think. We said if Bobby Fish comes back, then yes, we do believe there will be four-man teams for this show. And now he's back, so I believe there will be four-man teams for this show. There will probably not be a tag team title match now, but I don't think that's going to matter. I think it's going to be mostly built around the War Games match. So that'll be interesting. And as far as the other stuff, I'm 100% on board. This was the match that I would have loved to see them have earlier, but obviously you got to have them drive through some lower level teams and things like that. But it's the War Raiders are a special case because they're not great on the mic. So having them really show off the best of what they can do is a little bit more important with them, because you can get them over that way, way more than you can on the mic, because they had their backstage, their hype segment, but it didn't come off as genuine because both guys just kind of read in a very kind of wooden scripted manner. That's not a high point of their act yet. And maybe one of them will get it, and only one of them needs to. And if one of them gets good on the mic, then it'll be dynamite. But they are great in the ring, a great power team. And this was a giant step forward and a great step forward for what I think will probably be a long ongoing feud. So Justin, what did you think of the first of our main events?
Well, I'll definitely agree that this was a really solid match and easily the best that we've ever seen from the War Raiders on NXT. Folks, listeners with memories will know that I have dogged these guys a number of times, saying, these guys are like Exhibit F in my list of why I don't understand independent wrestling fans, because they keep telling me that wrestler so-and-so is amazing, and then they get to NXT and they're pretty boring. War Raiders just haven't brought it. Tonight they brought it. Hansen in particular, I won't say he like blew me away, but in the past he's tried doing these more athletic moves. He's taken the air a little bit, and it just looks sloppy, and it just was like, why are you doing this? Please don't, because you're emphasizing that you're a big guy rather than impressing me with your moves. And tonight he took to the air a few times, his feet left the ground, and it looked clean, it looked good. It didn't look like, didn't look like me trying to dunk a basketball. And so I was happy with that. Much more the promise that I've been told the War Raiders had, I felt delivered on. The non-finish, I mean, when I saw it, these guys, double main event means to me that they're the final two matches on the show, not that they kick the show off.
I thought that one of them would open the show, just because usually the filler gets thrown in the middle of a regular show. If this was a pay-per-view, obviously you'd have to do those at the end. But the whole concept is BS anyway, because
there's only one main event
of the show. Yeah.
Unless it's WrestleMania, then everybody's main eventing WrestleMania. Even the guys who were on the Andre the Giant Royal Battle Royal on the pre-show. So I thought the match quality was good. I knew there was going to be a dirty finish as soon as I realized that these guys were starting the show. If they were coming out at like 8:20 or 8:25 Eastern, I'd be like, oh yeah, this could go on. This could go to finish. I was just like, yeah, there's going to be a dirty finish here. It ending with Bobby Fish, though, that was not the dirty finish I expected. And Bobby Fish was brutal. I think that NXT just needs to have a global mandate. If you want to make a hot heel, put somebody on the bench for almost a year with a knee injury and have them come back with a knee brace.
Yeah, right.
And attack somebody with a weapon. That's the way to make a hot heel in NXT, apparently, because it worked for me. I was very happy seeing Bobby Fish return and the way that was handled. Great match.
We were asked a lot in the wake of Fish's injury whether they would sow the seeds of dissension when he came back, and we got her answer tonight.
I mentioned that in my report because that was something that we were curious. It was something that we really needed to know as fans, was are they going to have Fish come back or not as a solid unit. And I'm glad to see the way they did this.
I believed that Fish and O'Reilly would ultimately end up together. That's where I kept landing on, because Fish and O'Reilly were brought together because they are an awesome, well-oiled machine. They've teamed way more than Fish and Strong have in their lives. So I figured that was where this was ultimately going to go. The question will be, where does Roddy go from here? It seemed like Roddy's been great in this tag team setting. And yeah, they can do the free bird rule. We can see that again, even though we've already got New Day doing it on the main roster. So the free
Everybody
bird rule.
Everybody in NXT does it.
And we saw it in NXT before. And I wish that the free bird rule was kept rarer, but but whatever. I guess it's not a big deal.
And you know what? In NXT, it's the norm because they've had tons of stables, of three-plus man stables holding the tag team champions, right? You had the Wyatt family. You had AOP didn't do it. But Undisputed Era did. There's a couple others. Basically, anytime they have a stable, they end up with a tag team champion. It's just the default setting in NXT. It's just how it is. It's not rare in NXT where it's not like, oh, well, sometimes they can do it, sometimes they can't. Honestly, I think that if Paul Ellering wanted to help defend that title with Aikman Rizar, you know, kind of the unwritten rules of NXT would have said go for it.
Yep. So, very good match, obviously. And I dare say NXT did a good job of smoothing over the fact that they had essentially done a non-finish in this match. And obviously this feud will continue. So that'll be part of the good vibes as well. But Fish, the big moment here ended up, I think, overshadowing the fact that they didn't get a clean finish. And I don't know. That crowd, for as annoying as they can be at times, they are also very savvy. So, like, it seems like when they're robbed of a finish, they know that they were never going to get the finish. You don't hear that huge boo that you would around the country and during main roster shows when there's a non-finish. And it's like anybody with half a brain of wrestling knew that it wasn't going to be a finish. But Janelle, I don't know. Anyway,
these guys were I knew that there. I felt really certain that there was going to be a non-finish here, but the entire crowd was suddenly on their feet, staring up the ramp and cheering. I was like, "What is Johnny Gargano here?"
Yeah, right.
And then it was Bobby Fish with a chair. By God, it's Bobby Fish, and he's got a steel chair.
You know, it's funny. I almost, when he ran out, I almost didn't think of it as a return because he's been on their backstage segments.
He hasn't been in the ring.
The audience was probably more stunned to see him, the live audience, because they've been going to taping after taping and they haven't seen him. But at home, I'm just like, what's the big, he hasn't actually been in the ring.
The live audience is a little bit different from sports entertainers. Sports entertainers appear on the show and don't actually watch it on DVR when they get home. The live audience, I'm sure, watches it.
That's true. All right, so I got an email here from Paul Leonard. Hi, guys. I have to say this first. Holy crap, Fish is back. So do you think this means that War Games will be 4-on-4 now? Yes. If so, who makes sense to be the fourth against Undisputed Era? I figure War Raiders and Ricochet, but not sure who else they can throw in with them. Maybe Keith Lee to give him something to do? It was nice seeing Britt Baker in NXT, even if it was in the jobber role. But hey, Deonna started out that way as well, right? Last match was great, but I expected it to be because of, who was involved. I have to ask, though, am I the only one that was getting distracted by the glitter that was in the ring? The black part of it was great, especially because they did a good job of conveying how important it was with only saying two words. But, well, they kept the camera on black for too long because his angry face was a little too comical for me. That angry shaking face that sometimes they do always comes off a little bit silly, but when you ask a pro wrestler to act, sometimes you get melodrama. So what are you going to do?
And we know Aleister Black is no actor.
Right. He's fine. Like, wait, he's very much an Undertaker type where you can use his kind of slow, kind of dark, sad cadence for him rather than against him by giving him the right amount to say and by making everything he say feel like it has impact. I'm not for overly scripting guys, but if you have to script a guy, make it a guy like that where you can make it really feel special and important when he does speak. He very much like Undertaker was when he was Mean Mark Callis in WCW, he was a liability on the mic. He got to WWF and they found a way to use those things for him rather than against him. And he became somebody that people couldn't wait to hear speak, even though he was only going to say a handful of things. And they were usually the same, which is wrestling.
Rest in peace.
Yes. As far as your idea of putting Keith Lee in that match, I really like it. I think that this is a good place for him to go. Unless they have something really great for him singles-wise, this is exactly the match I'd put him in, because you can give him all kinds of his power spots, and he can do things with multiple guys, like lift up multiple guys at once, all kinds of stuff like that, that he won't be able to do as part of his singles act. I think that would be a perfect showcase for somebody who really could use the boost of that perfect showcase right now, just because people otherwise don't know how to react to him and his character right now. I really like that idea. So we'll talk about Britt Baker in a bit as well. I put down some notes about her. She's somebody I've seen some. So I took some notes about her as well.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Anything else on Paul Leonard's email, Justin?
I'm kind of torn. I mean, I really enjoyed War Games last year with the three teams of three. I think it opened up a lot of possibilities. You had the same dynamics as a triple threat without the people taking a nap on the outside situation because it was in the cage, plus the chaos of nine people in the ring. I think maybe that's just a bit overwrought for some, but for me, I thought it was just a fantastic format. So I'm not sure if I want to see 4-on-4. I could see 3-on-3. Like, I could see, I in the back of my head, I keep thinking that we're going to get like Pete Dunne and Ricochet and a third man, maybe Tyler Bate, on the same team.
Right.
And that would just be like totally hot to me.
And I know we've talked about that trio on the show. They could do
–
it's a good problem for them to have right now. Like, there's so many ways where they could go. But I have a feeling Seven and Bate are going to be primarily pushed as an NXT UK team now. By the way, for those – just for the sake of transparency, I've not gotten to see the NXT UK show that went up today.
Neither have I.
I will see it, but if anything – real obvious has been made about the future with those guys. We have not seen it.
I was busy working my job so I can fund Kelly's game and pay into everybody's social security funds.
Yeah, right. That's kind of that email. So we also have one email from JB that I'm going to get out of the way here. This is JB from Detroit. With the War Raiders versus UE this week, it got me thinking. In order to favorite to least favorite, how would you rank these famous NXT monster tag teams? The Ascension, Authors of Pain, War Raiders. I was a bigger fan of War Raiders during their War Machine and Incantation, and Ascension during a time with not much depth in the NXT tag team roster. I felt AOP had some classics with the Revival and DIY. Love the show and keep up the good work. JB, it seems like you and I have the same list here, which would be AOP on top, then War Raiders, then Ascension. However, I have seen a lot of War Machine on mostly from New Japan, and I've seen them working matches with other long-established big power tag teams. I've seen them work with some smaller tag teams as well, and I absolutely love what they bring to the table. It's going to be interesting to see them put against, I think, the kind of competition that they were up against in New Japan, they're not against anymore in NXT, because NXT doesn't have a lot of those ultra-talented, really large tag teams. Like, that's who they were mostly up against in New Japan. So it's a style that we haven't gotten to see them do. We won't see much of that until they go to the main roster, assuming that they do go. So they're harder to place than the other two teams. For me, AOP is easily above the Ascension. The Ascension never did anything for me. They were champions for a while when I started watching NXT, and they were champions for a while after I started watching NXT, but they were almost never against anyone important. The first time that I saw them wrestle against name guys, it was Too Cool. Yeah. And yeah. You knew Too Cool wasn't going to win. It was a while. I never really got it with them. My favorite thing the Ascension's done on WWE TV is be the background joke guys for Fashion Files. And that's not to say I hate it. It's not, but it's also not to say I hate them in the ring. I'm just not overly excited by them in the ring.
No, there's nothing there.
They're okay. I think they are where they should be on the card.
The best thing about the Ascension NXT was their entrance.
Yeah. Yep. And I felt that way too. I remember being very excited to see what they did, and then I was like, okay, well, these jobber matches or whatever. I'm excited to see them against a team that's good, and then I started to see them against higher ranked tag teams, and I was relieved when they got beat by, I think the Lucha Dragons were the ones who unseated them. I'd have to look to make sure, but I think it was Lucha. Anyway, Authors of Pain had some really great matches towards the end of their time in NXT, and some great ones on pay-per-view. They were a real NXT success story where they started out kind of humble and sort of okay, and they were not a team that I really I didn't really look forward to their appearances, and eventually they became a team I really looked forward to. And now when they're not booked on Raw, I get a little pissed off. I'm just like, what are you doing? You're sitting on these guys that did everything they could to prove how good they were. And, let's get this thing moving. But they're still undefeated, so that's cool.
Some teams like Revival had me hooked from day one, even though I wasn't a huge fan of Dash Wilder before he was in the Wild, before he was in the Revival. Like Dawson, I like Dawson from the moment he set foot onto my the moment he appeared on the screen with LaFort. What's his name? LaFort, right?
Sylvester.
Sylvester LaFort, thank you. As him and that other guy, I forget what maybe it was Marcus Louis. I forget who it was.
It was Marcus Louis. Yep.
Yep. And for the moment I saw him, and he was coming out doing this kind of uneducated, rural Southerner character, and there was just something about him that kind of got me, and I was like, he's cool. And then when the Revival, I was just like, man, these guys are awesome. I can't boo these guys. And Revival got me. But AOP from the beginning, if it's not clear, I'm a sucker for big man squashes. I'm just a sucker for that, right? You've heard me go gush much more than necessary about Lars Sullivan and Heavy Machinery.
Yeah.
And the Wyatt brothers, by the way, how in the world did Rowan and Harper not make it on this list?
I don't know. Fact. I guess I don't know how far he goes back with this team.
Fact.
With this NXT.
No. Fact. Fact. So, Wyatt and Harper, I thought Wyatt and Harper were awesome, and Bray Wyatt, even when he was Husky Harris in NXT originally, I liked Husky Harris. There's just something cool to me about big man squash. And maybe part of it's because I'm a bigger guy and I used to get picked on by smaller guys. And I finally realized one day, I was like, I don't have to get picked on by you. And I always thought it was cool. This is big guy who probably gets made fun of for his size, right? Just squishing these little dainty men under his heel and be like, yeah, you may make fun of me because I've got body hair and I sweat and I'm overweight, but I can kill you. To me, that's cool. And if you put Big Show up against Daniel Bryan, I'll cheer for Big Show. Oh, and yeah. And
that's horrifying.
I know. And I just like big man squashes. So AOP always intrigued me, but I didn't think that much of their in-ring work until, they worked. I give them so much credit for doing it the way they did it. And I just give them a ton of credit.
Yeah, and when you put a team against against Revival and DIY, and you put them against them every night on tour, and they get reps against really, really good, we'll call them average size tag teams. They're going to
Gargano's average size.
you know what I mean. I mean, from a build standpoint, these guys are average guys. So, it's you're going to be in a position to succeed. So a lot of times, the ones who really, really improve, it's no surprise when you see what kind of position they've been in.
You or I, Kelly, or I can't speak for you, but me, you can give me all the reps in the world against Chris Jericho. I'll never be a good wrestler, no matter how hard I try.
Well, I'm 41, so I should have started before now.
But I'm 39. But the talent was there. That's what I'm saying. Like, they got those reps in, but the talent was obviously there for them to become as good as they are.
Yeah.
And as quickly as they did.
And WWE wanted them to be good too, you know. So it's they don't want to promote a team on top that doesn't look like they deserve it. So it's in their best interest to really make this team a good team. And they did the work, they did their part, and I think they're a great act. So
great. So we managed to gush for like 30 minutes about AOP, and they haven't even been on the show in like a year.
You know, this episode has been a little all over the place. So let's talk about Britt Baker versus Shayna Baszler. This was obviously a little injury angle to put over Shayna. Britt Baker is an interesting one. She's been in a lot of great matches on the indies. She's legit. So if you care about this kind of thing, she was trained by Gargano and LeRae. If you care about this kind of thing, she is dating Adam Cole. So that is Britt Baker. She was against Shayna Baszler, and Shayna wins by injury. I did get a question about one. You know, the main things that these guys talked about in their emails are not this, but I will. Okay, let me see. Was it Kevin Catani? Yes. Okay. Kevin Catani. Here's his email. It's on everything. Salutations, gents. Woohoo. I was able to watch this on time this week. How novel. My first thought stems from the discussion you had on my point last week regarding the cross promotion between 205 Live and NXT. Has there been any talk on doing a second CWC? 205 Live could definitely use an infusion of new blood, and NXT could also benefit from some more high flyers. What do you think? From co-main event match one, I suppose we all knew a screwjob finish was in order, and I'm happy it was a chance for Bobby Fish to make his comeback. But why even bring Cole out if they weren't going to stop the match for interference? Wouldn't Fish's arrival have had the same effect on the crowd without Cole? If they wanted the whole group in the ring, Cole could have come in after. Was the Shayna match even necessary? Does a squash like that really do anything for her? I love the colored trunks for Lorcan and Birch. It adds some personality to them without drawing too much attention to them. What a finish to the episode. Thanks as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I will say the Shayna match was necessary in that I think that this is a really good way to put over her. You got to keep her on TV somehow, but you also don't want her to squash the important future names on NXT, because there is no way that Shayna is going to be on NXT much longer.
Yeah, there's no clearly point. Rotating her out.
Yeah, and you've got to have her do something there to do her part in pushing this match that is going to be on Evolution, that is going to be one of the best matches on Evolution, almost certainly. So I think that this was actually a really good use of Shayna Baszler. And if anything, I would question the use of Britt Baker, although you can use somebody in that position and then have that even be something important. Like maybe Britt actually snaps and comes back at Shayna. I doubt that is the plan. I assume she was just collateral damage here on the way. But I think that this was actually a really good use of Shayna, since you can't put her on TV and have her. You can't have her buzzsaw through Dakota Kai again at this point. You can't have her buzzsaw through Lacey Evans at this point. Those people need to remain hot as they are right now. So That is what I would say about that. As far as the second CWC, I have considered this as recently as a couple of days ago. I have heard nothing to assume to make me assume there is going to be another one. I would love to see another one, but I think with 205 Live becoming a weekly show, that that's probably not in the cards, because then if you have... To me, it seems like a conflict of interest, because if you have the CWC and say these are the best cruiserweights in the world, then what is 205 Live if it's not the best cruiserweights in the world? Because you've got to – one can't be the other. But you're right that because of the infusion in new talent would be nice, because a show that's an hour and it has a relatively small roster and you see a lot of the same guys, there is some of that. And as much as I really, really like the wrestling on 205 Live – I would love to see a little bit of an infusion of talent as well, but then we have to go to 2 hours and then it's probably too much. And I don't know. I would love to see a tournament, but I am a massive mark for tournaments. So you will get no argument from me.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
On this entire email, do you have anything, Justin?
I'll say that I if there's one match I'm a bigger sucker for than the big man squash, it's the woman squash.
I could have watched Asuka beat Jax two
all
times a week, every
year
week.
Yep. Long. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can watch Shayna Baszler beat jobbers. You can make a show. Instead of 205 Live, how about that time slot? We'll call it Baszler Live or Broken Arms Live, right? And all I see is Ronda Rousey locking in arm bars and Shayna Baszler stomping arms for like a half hour. I'll watch it. And then we can throw on like heavy machinery beating up people too. And like, I'll watch it and I'll enjoy it every week. And so not only did I enjoy this, I thought it was hilarious that the announcers tried to make this bizarre connection between Britt Baker and Dr. Isaac Yankum DDS. Well, ignoring the Adam Cole connection.
Right. I'm sure that Kane was thrilled about that. Kane has walked out of interviews when he's Isaac Yankum DDS. So
yeah, he gets really testy about that. From
it made air. So, you know, somebody must have, I don't know, but
does he watch? Do you think he watches NXT? Mauro Ranallo to mention Dr. Isaac Yankum. What's he gonna do? Big Red Machine Mauro to death.
I believe that Mauro would poke that bear just because he'd think it was funny. I don't think he would care.
Mauro's Canadian, and yeah, so that was cool. I think in terms of the Cruiserweight Classic, I think the right way to do this is to treat 205 Live as a show that people from NXT, quote-unquote, graduate to.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't think that what you need to do is have a tournament and inject, like, another 15 people into 205. That's a great way to bootstrap it. And maybe you can have a tournament within 205 and invite a couple people from outside 205. You know, so let's say you have a 32-person tournament, and I don't know how big the 205 roster is, but let's say it's 28, right? And say, okay, we're going to get four people from outside 205 to get on here, and maybe the one that gets the farthest gets to be on the show, right? And so then you can pick, and then you can cherry pick one or two people and add them without diluting the roster too hard. But I think that really what 205 needs, and I've said this like every week for like the last 10 years. Johnny Gargano needs to be on 205 Live for everybody's sake. It'll be good for Gargano. It'll be great for 205 Live. I didn't watch the show.
2 months behind. I fall behind and then I pick it up and I watch a bunch in a row. I know that last week I was talking to you guys before the show about how I had, like, in the previous 2 days I'd watched 11 episodes or something like that. I've only seen two since, so I'm still like 2 months behind, but the smallness of the roster really gets driven home when you watch that many in a short amount of time. But I guess that would happen regardless of which show you were watching. So
yeah, if I binged NXT, I'd get real sick of seeing Ciampa, Gargano, you know, they're top champions. Like, Undisputed Era would be like this dirty taste I couldn't get out of my mouth.
That used to happen to me. I used to fall behind in NXT before I got this gig. And so that would happen where I'd be 4 or 5 weeks behind and I'd be mulling over some storyline in my head and thinking, how's that going to resolve? And meanwhile, it was resolved a month ago.
It happened to me in 2016. I spent basically 2 months working like 80 to 100 hours a week on site with the customer, which is no ability to watch NXT at all. Yeah. And when I finally got done with it and I caught up, I think I went through like 8 or 10 episodes in a couple of days. I was so sick of it.
Yeah, right. Yep, that can happen. Okay, so I'm going to do Michael McGivern's email just because it's about the Mae Young Classic, but we were talking about the women's match, so here we are. Greetings, gentlemen. Who from this year's Mae Young Classic would you like to see more of in NXT? Besides the obvious names, I look forward to seeing more of Reyna Gonzalez in a Nia Jax monster heel role, Mia Yim and Killer Kelly in NXT UK. Thanks, guys. The show gets better every week. I would say that Mia Yim is one of the obvious names. I absolutely adore Mia Yim, and I was upset last year when she wasn't hired right away. I am going to call out a couple of more. I pulled up the list of wrestlers just to make sure I wasn't going to forget anyone. Toni Storm, we're obviously going to see in UK, and so I look forward to that. Tegan Knox, I really, really like, but there's an injury on the horizon for her, and we're going to have to wait out that injury, and that sucks because I really, really like what she brings to the table. And one that I want to mention is Xia Brookside. I absolutely loved her first round match. She lost, but she is the daughter of Robbie Brookside. I think he's the head trainer or one of the trainers in NXT. I forget the titles everybody has all the time, but Xia Brookside, she's cute as a button. And she can really work. She's 19, I think they said. But she's very, very good in the ring already. And of course she's going to be, because she is the daughter of a pro wrestling trainer. So obviously she's going to be good. But she had a very good match, acquitted herself well. And I think she is one that I'd be very interested to see more of. And I believe she will probably be, like we said, I haven't seen the NXT UK product yet. So maybe she's in that tournament. Maybe she's on the show, but I'm very excited about what can happen there. Deonna Purrazzo is one I would mention. She's already started to be on TV. Karen Q, maybe. Lacey Lane, I think, has an awesome, awesome look. We'll see how she develops. I don't know who's going to be signed yet, and I don't know who's not. I actually don't pay a lot of attention to who's getting signed until it's right there in my face. I don't know, Justin, if you're caught up on it. I know you have only so much time for wrestling, and NXT and the main roster take up a lot of it.
I still haven't even gotten to watch the original Mae Young Classic, and I'm upset with myself because NXT has made me not just a huge proponent, but also a huge fan of women's wrestling. And I really enjoy women's wrestling, and I'm disappointed that I haven't gotten to watch either the original or the current Mae Young Classic. That said, out of the names that you listed, Mia Yim is somebody who I've also heard some good stuff about. And Tegan Knox is also somebody who interests me, although I thought that Tegan Knox was already signed or something, because like every time I go on Twitter, it seems like Tegan Knox and Dakota Kai are acting or talking as if, you know, Knox is already on. Yeah, because didn't they call her Nixon
That's
Newell?
That's possible.
In fact, she's already been on NXT as Nixon Newell, but being on NXT doesn't mean anything. Lots of people have been on NXT for one thing, but I'm pretty sure she's signed to NXT already.
And that's possible, but this injury may have derailed the timetable.
I think that's what happened.
I'm excited to see. So I also should have mentioned Casey Catanzaro. I was a fan of her even on American Ninja Warrior. I watched her victory on American Ninja Warrior several times, long before I ever knew she was going to be signed by WWE. So when she was signed by WWE and, you know, the nation shook its head and said, I don't know who that is. I was actually very excited about that. And I thought she looked pretty good in her first two matches for somebody who's obviously pretty green. So so there's work to be done there as a character. I think she's just getting started. But yeah, I'm excited to see her move forward as well, especially given her tiny stature. I don't know that will be something that will have to work against her. Obviously, it hasn't mattered with Alexa Bliss. But she's also not blonde, so who knows how Vince is going to treat her. So so that's...
She's going to tell her to go to the store and buy some hair dye.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we had Only Lorcan and Danny Burch against Tian Bing and Rocky. I don't know why this is, but I'm always amused when you got a tag team where one guy gets his first and last name and the other one's just a first name. And I don't remember the last time I saw that, but I'm like, what? You didn't even warrant a last name, or are you too cool for a last name? I just think it's funny seeing the two names right by each other. I was very interested to see.
Yeah, but no one's in Elias.
He used to have a last name, but he got too big.
He wasn't even cool enough to keep his last name.
Right. So, yeah, I found it interesting that we actually got the full entrance of these guys. It suggests that maybe these guys are important. You know what's really funny about this entrance is that it made me think more and more about Moss and Sabatelli. I was like, these guys are really buried to the back burner. Like, we got a mini push and we got them on TV for a while, and now haven't seen them in months.
Because they're both injured.
They're both injured?
They're both injured. They got injured within like a week or two of each other.
Oh my gosh.
They don't just share the Maserati, they share the knee injuries.
One of them got like, it's like when, oh my gosh.
You know what happened last week? I don't think anybody's ever asked this question before him, but you just copied him. My oldest son asked me, he said, whatever happened to Riddick Moss and Tito Sabatelli? Like, he cared.
Like, wow.
He cared. And now I know you care too.
It's my job to care, frankly. that's how I feel. Yeah. So anyway, Lorcan and Burch breeze through Bing and Rocky. Decent enough match. And it seems like they have some plans for Burch and Lorcan. Again, this could end up being on the UK show. I don't know. But. But yeah, I too noticed the colored tights that Katani called out. Seems like a little thing, but new gear sometimes means that there are plans for somebody.
New gear, new year, new me. I like the tights. And I got to say, this was about a 2.5-minute match. I liked what I saw of Bing and Rocky.
I mean, yeah.
We didn't get to see much. I've never heard of either of these two guys. I'm sure maybe I read an announcement somewhere like a million years ago.
Saw Tian Bing once because he was in the WrestleMania Battle Royal 2 years ago.
Yeah, like, they mentioned
out of
that.
Nowhere he was.
No, that could have been on the kickoff show.
I mean, lasted a while.
If it was on the kickoff show, there's really a chance I missed it.
Okay, yeah, I always watch the kickoff show, especially for WrestleMania. I'm a sucker for Battle Royals. And Bang, I want to say, did okay. Like, I want to say he lasted till about the middle of the pack or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they said that. You know, the announcers said that. They said, you know, this is Bang, and he was in the Battle Royal, and he did well. They did mention that.
Oh, they mentioned that he did well? I didn't even realize.
Or they mentioned they did, you know. Yeah, they're putting him over, but I'll say what I saw of him I liked. You know, I saw both of them I liked. There is a lot of people who we see in NXT once or twice who they obviously like enough to give them an entrance. I'm going to say Cesar Bononi and that other guy that we saw him teaming up with recently, whose name's got lots of vowels in it. He's from Brazil.
Raul Mendoza.
No, not Raul Mendoza.
Okay. Adrian Jaoud.
Yes, Adrian Jaoud. Thank
vowels.
You.
It does have a lot of vowels all back to back.
It's all vowels except for two. It's got a J and a D and the rest of
that
vowels.
That's what you took out of it, Adrian Jaoud.
Adrian Jaoud. So
he does. He's got a lot of vowels.
So weird kind of side fact is, with the specific work I do, I interface a lot with a company based out of Portugal. And so these Portuguese names and Jaoud's from Brazil, if I'm remembering correctly. So
I have to look it up.
I'm pretty sure he's from Brazil. And so that particular flavor of names is one that I struggle with on a very regular basis. Right. I have to deal with like 800 people named Zhao and another 32 Rodrigos and.
Right.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
So anyway, we fell way off the rails there, talking about Lorcan and Birch coming back.
Like Tom's
anyway,
still here.
What's that?
Like Tom's still
right?
here.
Like Tom never left. And we do have an email from him coming that does have some fun stuff about the taping we just saw. Let's talk about our match, main event match, the other main event match, I'm sorry. Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair. Did you know? Here's my stat of the week, since Harley is not here to talk about stats. Nikki Cross won a match on February 21st, forever ago. I want to say that was that. I have it right in front of me. I thought it was Vanessa. Yes, Vanessa Bourne. She won a match on February 21st, 2018. Do you know how many matches she has won since then?
None.
The answer is one. She's won one match since then. On August 8th, she defeated Amber Nova. That is the only win she has since February 21st.
Nikki Cross is the biggest loser in NXT. And I don't mean like loser in like the President Trump tweeting way. I mean loser in terms of like win-loss record. She's like the biggest loser in NXT.
Well, she's 3-2-2 this year, but her wins are against – she beat Lacey Evans on January 31st, which – is good, except Lacey was not getting any kind of push at that point. Vanessa Bourne on February 21st, and Vanessa Bourne's been in some competitive matches, but is not a winner. And then Amber Nova on August 8th, which was 2 months ago. Obviously, we talked about it, but I don't remember it, so there you go.
Even Dakota Kai has beaten Vanessa Bourne.
Right. I will not have you besmirch Dakota Kai, but yeah, I get what you're saying. But yeah, Nikki lost to Shayna. She lost the number one contenders match against Kairi Sane and Candice LeRae, and now the double count out and the no contest against Bianca Belair. Now, this was another match, just like the first one, where they didn't give us a finish, but they gave us something that made people forget there wasn't a finish, because this was a really, really great way, I think, to bring back Aleister Black. Because obviously, if he knows, she knows, he's got to come back. He's got to confront her at the very first opportunity that he has to do so. So, I was psyched about this. I was psyched about it, even though I kind of knew in the back of my mind we were about to get a Monday Nitro finish where we know all the information is out, like something big is happening, then they're like, well, we better fade out. We're out of time, even though the end of the show is an arbitrary time, just like Nitro was. So it was – that part was kind of silly, and one of our readers was pointing out – or listeners was pointing out that that his moment of anger was kind of – overwrought, but whatever. I'm excited to find out, and now it seems like we'll find out next week. So at the beginning of the tapings, they limited spoilers as much as possible because this was the taping main event, and now we're next week we'll start with the taping that happened tonight. I will get to Tom Staupe's email, but let's not talk about this match because this match was kind of fun and kind of brutal. What'd you think?
Ooh, I love this match. Belair was just so good in her transition from that early confidence, because maybe the first time we saw this match, right, Belair started off as kind of like almost intimidated or like what's going on here, confused by Cross's crazy stuff, right? And here she came into it much more confident, like, I know your game and I'm going to beat you. And then she started to lose that confidence as she just couldn't win the match. And I thought Belair really nailed her character here. Nikki Cross, of course, did the Nikki Cross scenes. The in-ring was great. This was a hard-hitting match. I don't know if anyone else knows, but near the end of the match, Belair was foolish enough to wear earrings to the ring. And one of them was like half dangling out of her ear, and it was like bleeding. Yeah, little stuff like that. Although why anyone in the world would wear a pair of diamond studs out to the ring is beyond me. That's just some common sense. Like when I see people wearing jewelry, necklaces, belts with buckles on them to the ring, it just, to me, it just totally blows the believability, because you're like, you would never wear that in a fight. Like, as an opponent, like, I would never get into a fight with somebody who's wearing a belt with a buckle.
Yeah, right.
And if I was a wrestler, the last thing I'd do would be to provide my opponent with something to suplex me with, a convenient handhold. Right? It's like in Fight Club when they talk about, you know, people, you know, cutting their nails and shaving and cutting their hair to, you know, it's like one of those things. I mean, this was a hard hitting match. The ending with Black, I personally didn't find it comical, because this thing happens, you know, because it was so believable and it's Black's character. What I didn't like is that Black pulled an Undertaker with the light show.
Oh, yeah, that was...
I did not like that.
I thought something was wrong with my TV.
Yes, so did I.
Sure.
You know what? I would have thought that, except for the way I watch it. I use a 40-inch 4K TV as my computer monitor.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I split half the screen between NXT on one side, and then the other side I have it divided half between a web browser to look stuff up and do a stopwatch, and my text editor to record what's going on. So I knew there was something wrong with that, but I was like, why is everything black? Because it looked like the way it went black is it looked like somebody knocked a camera or something, or somebody pointed up to the ceiling, something like that. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't realize that the lights were supposed to be out. And then when I realized that that's what was going on, that was black, my first reaction is, why are we having a character in NXT who can turn the lights on and off?
Yeah.
It's just like on main roster, they have phased everybody like that out except for like Undertaker and Kane. And now Bray Wyatt, but that was always kind of his character. I never liked that. It just takes me out of the moment.
I can make it make sense for Aleister Black from a character standpoint, but the comparisons to Undertaker as a character are going to be there just because, like, I've talked about that, I know, more than a few times, and how he's got the mystique that can kind of rival in some ways. I don't know about rival, but it the same sort of feel to his character is there. But if you start doing all the same things letter by letter, then it looks like, as a company, you're trying to recreate the past, and it looks sad and it's transparent.
Yep.
So let him be himself. I mostly like this segment as well. I wouldn't have said the word comical like the listener did either, but it was about as much as you would ask of a guy like Aleister from that acting standpoint. He was okay in what he had to do, and I'll say this about the Nitro finish: it did make me want to see what happens next week, just as Nitro did. So, you know, for as long as Nitro was good, which was a couple of years, but yeah, this was I don't know. It's too bad that it kind of buries the match, and it's too bad that we probably won't see a finish to this feud, because I don't think they want Bianca to take a loss. At this point, I would think it was hugely ridiculous for Bianca's first loss to come at the hands of Nikki Cross. That seems odd because Nikki's so over, but Nikki also does not win very often. She doesn't win very many matches. So if she doesn't seem like the right person to take something like that's that important away from Bianca Belair when that's a major, major selling point.
It's a selling point for Belair. At the same time, nobody cares if Nikki Cross wins or not.
Yeah.
Like she is such total Teflon on the win loss department. She's going to be over no matter what. So if you're going to give anyone, in fact, there's no character on the NXT roster who needs a win over Belair to get over. Candice LeRae.
It's just like with Nikki, it just seems like maybe they thought one more high profile loss is too many, and so you find a way to keep her on TV. She doesn't have to win. She doesn't have to lose. She hasn't done either a win or a loss in 2 months and a week when she defeated Amber Nova.
Nikki Cross been around.
Been on TV. She's been on TV more than she's ever been on TV because there are times where she's been gone for weeks at a time. She's gotten a lot of TV time, but she just hasn't had any wins or losses.
Yeah, I mean,
she hasn't had that many matches.
She literally wrestles less than once a month.
Yep.
She wrestles less than once per taping.
Yep. She's got 7 matches she's got 7 matches for the year so far, and actually was only on TakeOver once in 2018. The one against Shayna in June. That's it. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with Nikki. She's going to be on Evolution, I assume, because they're trying to put everybody on Evolution, and she'll probably just be in the Battle Royal, but I don't know, 7 matches on TV this year for Nikki, which is odd. So they're just as confused about what to do with her as we are. I'm going to read a couple of notes from our erstwhile friend, Tom Staupe. Bringing my daughter to the tapings tonight for the first time, although the other night she told me she thinks Roman Reigns is cool, so I'm not sure she deserves it. All right, Baker and Baszler. It was a fantastic surprise to see Baker, and a disappointing surprise that this crowd didn't seem to know her or at least care about her. She had received a massive pop for her surprise dark match appearance on the first night of this year's Mae Young Classic tapings, but this time it seemed I was alone on my feet. As for the alleged shoulder separation, no X was thrown up, but Baker did later tweet she would be taking off time to heal up. I'm no shoulder separation rehab expert, but my suspicion is that it was a work to build up Baszler's power going into Evolution and allow Baker an excuse to focus on her dental career for a while. As of this past week, she has been back in the ring for ROH, but in the meantime, she has been performing Botox treatments at a dental clinic not more than a few miles north of the Performance Center. Okay, that's weird. Lorcan and Birch versus Bing and Han. We have seen Tian Bing previously in the Dusty Classic teaming with Ho-Ho Loon, but this was Rocky Han's TV debut. So apparently he does have a last name. I just didn't know it. He has previously worked dark matches at the tapings as well as the NXT Coconut Loop in singles matches and in tag teams with other Chinese wrestlers, including Jason Chang, Big Boa, and Xia Li. Belair Cross. As I'm sure you could tell, this was the loudest fan contest of the night. This is purely subjective and ignores the dissonance these contests create between the crowd and the story and the pacing of the match at hand, not to mention the distraction it poses upon the television experience. But in this case, I enjoyed it because there was a young special needs boy sitting right in front of me who was going absolutely nuts for Nikki Cross throughout the entire match. At one point, I found Jeremy Borash's attention and pointed to the kid, and Borash responded with a knowing nod that said, "Of course, that's who's going to get this free t-shirt." When the boy received the reward, he was absolutely over the moon. ignoring the fact that a new investigation will need to be opened to determine what Aleister Black did to Bianca Belair, I am curious as to whether this segment continued backstage once Black stormed off, visibly vibrating with rage. As Black disappeared from the stage, it was the last we saw from him at the tapings, leaving we bleacher heathens with no dirt to spread online ahead of what may turn out to be the ultimate reveal on tonight's episode. Or is Black leaving the stage perhaps the episode cliffhanger? Surely they won't pay anything off on their here's what happened after we went off the air social media videos. Finally, another no contest here further cements my suspicion that War Games will feature a triple threat for the Women's Championship. And War Raiders versus Undisputed Era. Fish unabashedly went for a babyface reaction here, antagonizing only his adversaries and the off-screen officials guiding him to wrap up the segment. It's unlikely they'll show it, but as Drake Wirtz stood beneath the view of the hard cam pointing to the entrance ramp in an effort to clear the ring so the show could move along, which is not an uncommon practice at the tapings, Fish verbally lashed out at him, in character I'd estimate, as he seemed to want to soak in as much of the long-awaited moment as possible. So, Tom, well done. You talked the most again.
God, there was so much there. Like, I had something to say in response to something he said, and now I've got to go and review his email because, I mean, he just managed to
he buried his own point. I love the bit about the kid getting the T-shirt. That's very cool. Yeah, about the moment of Aleister Black. Obviously, Tom didn't know how that was going to end, but they ended it in the ring.
That's what it was. That was my big frustration with this match, is they didn't even call a no contest. I left the stopwatch running, and I'm like, when does this end? And then the show faded to black, and yeah. I was like, this match is still technically running. Where did Bianca Belair go? And it wasn't just Belair who disappeared. Where did Jessica Carr go? Not Jessica Carr. Where did the referee go? The referee disappeared too.
It was not Carr for that one. Yeah, but where did he go?
Carr did, that's something I noticed during the Baszler match. Carr was so good. And yeah, having like this really disgust. She had this disgust on her face when she raised Baszler's hand. She's like, I'm disgusted that you have won this match in this fashion.
Yeah, that's old school wrestling where we're supposed to believe in the babyface. We're supposed to be disgusted. It's not supposed to be like, hey, just make your choice. The idea is to build a babyface we're supposed to be behind.
Yeah,
like Carr was disgusting. I know that's hard today, but that's what it's supposed to be.
And there was something about the way Carr handled the whole thing. Like, Carr pleaded with Baszler to not break the arm. She pleaded, right? She's like, please stop. Please don't do this. You know, telling her, don't do this, even though it's a totally legal move. And, you know, she's there trying to protect a wrestler's physical health. And she immediately separated them, got between, checked, and you can tell like the way she did it. I almost felt like Baker was saying like I'm good to go, and I almost felt like Carr was just like, no, you're not, and made the call for her. There was just that whole interaction was just so well done, and it's very rare that I'm ever going to notice a referee because that's how WWE does things. But Jessica Carr has been such a standout. Yeah.
I really like Drake as well.
Yep, I like Drake as well.
And and on the main roster, my favorite, Kyoto's been my favorite my entire life. Because I started watching wrestling in 1990, and he was either around already or he would be soon. And Kyoto's always been my guy. He's very excitable. He's very animated. And yet he does not steal focus. He is perfect. Love him. So, Kyoto's my guy. And John Cone is pretty good on the main roster now too. And I love Drake. What's that?
Robinson just bores me. Just has his look on his face. Like, man, I got out of bed for this.
Robinson's okay. But you know what? It's like you brought him up and I was like, wait, who's that? And like, I had to remind myself that Charles.
Never mind that this guy's been around since, for like 30, 40 years, I mean, Little Nate and all that.
Yep. And he's never aged a day, so he's got that going for him. So that's I think that's our show. Weird way to end, but we started weird and it's been a weird show. only two of us here, but with a lot of emails and a lot of weird stuff to unpack that wrestling fans aren't supposed to have to talk about, it went long. So that's what you get. If you want to email me, I am Kelly Wells. You can find me, or not email me. Don't email me. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. You can back my game if you have time. It will be done possibly by the time you listen to this for your morning commute. But, yeah, that's it at Spooky Milk. If you want to get a hold of Harley, who should be back after the Mae Young Classic is over, then you can find him on at Talking Honor. Tom is at Tom Staup, and Justin.
I am at Justin_M_James in the competition of the most non-alphanumeric characters in a Twitter handle.
There you go. So, yeah, we... it was a good show, despite feeling a little Nitro-y, feeling a little Attitude Era-y, if you will. But I dare say it got us rolling towards our inevitable conclusions at, well, Evolution, but also War Games. So very excited about that, and we'll see where it goes from here with a new set of tapings next week. All right, we'll see you, gang. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.